Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries, great ministry, a nonprofit ministry that relies on generous support from listeners like you, and thanks for listening. As we approach the end of the year, it's our 20th season on the air. Would you consider making a donation? Any amount helps us continue providing this content. Simply go to bebroken.org/donate to make your year-end gift. Thank you for your support and thanks for listening. God bless.
To make your tax-deductible donation to Be Broken Ministries, visit bebroken.org/donate or call 210-822-8201. That's bebroken.org/donate or 210-822-8201. Thank you for your partnership. Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In today's episode, my guests are Mark and Jill Savage, a couple that understands struggle, betrayal, and restoration. They talk about their incredible journey. They talk about the journey to rebuild trust after betrayal. You know, Mark opens up about his midlife crisis and infidelity after 28 years of marriage, while Jill shares the deep pain and the process of healing. They emphasize the importance of personal growth, accountability, and transparent communication. Mark's transformation began with a personal resurrection moment one Easter Sunday, leading to consistent efforts to regain Jill's trust. Their story is a testament to the power of God's faithfulness and commitment in overcoming marital challenges, offering hope and practical insights for couples facing similar struggles. To learn more about Mark and Jill and their resources, visit jillsavage.org. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, we'd love it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now, let's get into today's conversation with Mark and Jill Savage.
Well, all right. We have Mark and Jill Savage with us today. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks.
We're so glad to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I always love it when we can get couples together on the program because then we'll always know if the stories are accurate.
Yes.
You know, one won't be inflating or deflating the stories. So
right.
And that's really where I want to start. I feel like you guys have a beautiful story to tell. And because eventually we're going to talk about what does it look like to rebuild trust when there's been betrayal in a marriage. But share with our listeners and viewers just your story and how you got to doing the work that you're doing now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's see. We say that we have been married 41 years, 31 of them happily. And it wasn't that there were 10 bad years in a row.
No.
Just a lot.
They were a little bit here, a little bit there, a lot there. You know, just it's the way marriage rolls out for many.
Mm-hmm. And we were in full-time ministry, church ministry. Mark was a pastor. Mm-hmm. I served as a leader of a large nonprofit organization for moms for 24 years. And it was in 2010 that Mark was pretty worn out from ministry.
Yeah. I was worn out from pastoring the church and actually very discouraged and ended up retiring from pastoring and went back to what I knew, home remodeling, and launched a business and stayed busy. But I didn't realize how much my identity was in pastoring. And a part of my family DNA is depression and anxiety. And so I really started to slide into a deep hole. Ended up in a full-on midlife crisis, affair included. I ended up leaving Jill and the kids, pursuing this other relationship.
And as you can imagine, my world blew up. I would have put us in the category of least likely to have that happen. I was dealing with my pain, my children's pain, They were, the three oldest were 20s, all married in their 20s. The two youngest were still at home, teenagers, 15 and 17, and all of them heartbroken. As my kids would say, we knew Dad was off. We just couldn't figure out what was going on. And so I really believed that if Mark would return to his God, he would return to his marriage. And so I stood for our marriage for a year and believed in that. It wasn't looking very possible that things were turning around. And in fact, my Christian counselor was starting to have conversations with me like, Jill, it's probably time for you to think about moving forward and recognizing that maybe Mark's not going to respond. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, on Easter Sunday of 2012,
I had my own personal resurrection. That other relationship and I were starting to struggle, and I realized that, man, there's a common thread in all of these struggles, and it's me. And so on that Easter, I ended up surrendering fully to Christ. And since then, I've not turned back. I've been like, I'm going to live your will, your way. And prior to that, even as a pastor, I was always arguing and debating with God and just trying to convince him that my way would surely be a better way if he would just follow me. And that doesn't really work out. And so in my mess, I surrendered, and Jill and I began the process. And actually, I'm grateful for her willingness, but we began the process of restoring.
Yeah. Yeah, but it took about 18 months of weekly marriage counseling and rebuilding trust with each other. Mm-hmm. And I say with each other because I think that's important, because oftentimes when you're dealing with something like broken trust or infidelity or deception, it's easy to put the full focus on the person that betrayed. And certainly there was a lot of trust to be rebuilt there.
Right.
But what I say is I didn't cause Mark's affair, but I contributed to the dysfunction in our marriage. And so there were ways I broke his trust over the years, like with my critical spirit or with not being vulnerable in our marriage. And so our rebuilding trust journey certainly was the big part, was him rebuilding trust after the affair, but it was also me rebuilding trust in a lot of little ways.
Mm-hmm. So I want to, before we move to more of the kind of the other side of the coin, the healing part of the journey, I want to kind of go back to, you know, the dissolving, kind of the dissolution of the relationship, because you guys had been married for a good long time at that point mm-hmm. in time.
28 and years.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, Mark, that you were kind of getting burned out, I guess you could say, in mm-hmm. your pastor role. What were some things, now that you have kind of hindsight, how far mm-hmm. back would you maybe go into your relationship prior to that point where your things maybe started to show some cracks?
I would say the cracks were obvious in my childhood. We've okay. learned a lot about attachment theory, and we didn't learn about that until after we were rebuilding trust, and or as we were rebuilding trust. And so I came into marriage with huge expectations that were so unrealistic and off the charts. And I kept measuring our daily life against my high expectations. So I lived in a perpetual disappointment, and just I lacked any type of satisfaction in our relationship. It was like Jill was never enough. And so I would say from day one, that was the backpack that I was carrying. And then we would have struggles throughout our relationship. I sought a lot of counseling, but it was always band-aided. It was always try this, do this, be this. And
it was just never getting to the root, the right heart of the messages you were believing.
Yeah.
And to some degree that I was believing, because my messages were mixing with yours. I was raised in a healthy home, a healthy family in general, but we were the buck up family. And so if life gets hard, you buck up. And so that made me not highly compassionate, not highly sensitive. It made me a strong leader. Mark was raised in an environment of abuse, an environment of a lot of pain. And the messages like "your voice doesn't matter" would like resonate in his head. So all our entire married life, like even in the beginning, he was very passive. I was very strong. So we had this, what we call the strong woman, silent man cycle going on too. And so that was playing out, and it was also feeding into his frustration and his discontentment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's interesting, even as you guys were just sharing that briefly, I immediately went to, it's no wonder you guys fell in love with each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
You know, your brokenness actually sort of harmonized with each other in mm-hmm. some ways. And so talk about then when the actual breakdown started to happen of you, Mark, deciding that for whatever the reasons were, it was better for you to start looking outside of your marriage rather mm-hmm. than working on the things within your marriage.
Well, I think there was just a collision of frustrations that were welling up inside of me. I felt as if I wasn't enough. I wasn't needed. I believed that Jill would be fine without me. And I had convinced myself that my kids would be, they would be fine. They would actually celebrate it. Dad, I don't know how you put up with Mom. She's a hard woman. Of course, that was not what happened. But I would say a couple years prior to the affair, I was starting to slide, and I was trying to manage it the best I could. I couldn't really figure out what was happening. And then,
You started to also keep a mental list, which actually became a physical list of everything wrong with me and us.
That is true. And boy, is that embarrassing. But yeah, I kept a list of what was wrong with Jill and us and Jill, and it was pretty heavy
on the Jill
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
And makes sense then that your actions would start to go in the direction of all of those negative thoughts.
Yeah. And then I was just in a perfect storm. This relationship, she pursued me for help as a pastor. She was going through a divorce. I had known her since high school, and so I, as always, I hopped into that offer, or I hopped in and offered her help. And then eventually it went from what was wrong with her marriage to what's wrong with my marriage. And then we started to connect. And I would say I wasn't pursuing a relationship, but it did start to happen naturally in the height of my brokenness and hers.
Yeah. Now, and I'm sure we're going to get to this, the need for just ongoing cultivation of intimacy in a relationship. Mm-hmm. It sounded like that's where some of the breakdown was too. There had been maybe some walls formed on both sides, maybe of saying, hey, this doesn't meet my expectations. This doesn't meet my expectations. What was it like for you? Plus, you obviously had a full home of kids mm-hmm. to raise.
Oh, totally.
And what did that, how have you maybe in hindsight looked at what even just raising a family does to the marriage mm-hmm. relationship if there's not real intentionality towards the marriage?
Yeah.
Well, and I think the hard part for us is We were super intentional, Jonathan. We went on date nights. We went away, just the two of us. We knew each other's love languages and we spoke them. Like, we were as intentional as you can get from an external perspective. Mm-hmm. But what we weren't understanding was the dynamics that would play out in our, was playing out in our hearts, and that was pulling our hearts apart one little quarter inch at a time. And we actually, in our book, No More Perfect Marriages, we identify those as what we call slow fades. Casting Crowns wrote a song, it's a slow fade. And one of the lyrics is, no marriage crumbles in a day. It's a slow fade. And one of the slow fades is unrealistic expectations. And so that was, Mark shared about that. He'd had unrealistic expectations for 28 years. So his heart had been pulled away little by little over those 28 years. For me, one of my slow fades was not having emotional vulnerability. Growing up in that buck up home. In fact, I would have said, you know, when he's very discontent in our marriage, I was like, we're good. I'm fine. Says the avoidant partner. But that's pretty normal in an avoidant partner. And so I wasn't experiencing any kind of dissatisfaction in our relationship. Another slow fade is child-centeredness. And I would say that happened when our kids were little, but we did kind of correct that. But it's still, when you've got a full house, you've got a full family, your focus is very family-centered. And it is not uncommon that as the kids begin to leave, you kind of look and go, I don't even know what we have in common anymore.
Right.
So let's talk about, you know, Mark, you had your resurrection. You guys start to work on rebuilding this marriage that had just been torn apart. I know there's multiple aspects of that. There's there's forgiveness. There is communication. There's all these kind of things. But I really want to hone in on the trust piece, because I the older I get, the more I do this kind of ministry, I firmly believe that the absolute foundation of a healthy relationship is the truth. And only from the truth can we build trust.
Yes.
And so trust is so essential. And obviously that had been ripped to shreds. So can you talk to us about kind of what that looked like? Now, first, I want you to share with it in terms of what it looked like in your story, and then maybe we can highlight some of the key principles and elements, recognizing none of us do life perfectly. So even when we're trying to rebuild these things, you guys made errors. I've made errors in my life. But share your story of what it was like to rebuild trust first.
Well, let me start with an illustration. So Jill and I see when trust is broken, it's like our trust is like a bathtub full of water. And when I went out and had this affair, blew up my family, it was like I pulled the stopper out of the bottom of that tub and all the trust water went out. And you can't just turn on a spigot and all of a sudden it's filled up.
You can't just say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. And then the bathtub's full.
Right. And so it's what we say sometimes is a spoonful, a quarter of a cup, or a cup at a time. And so trust is rebuilt by consistent change behavior over time.
And that's exactly what Mark began to do. He began to take the he began to consistently change the way that he handled things. Like, I'd say the week after his U-turn, that's what we call it, on that Easter Sunday, he opened up his phone. He opened up his emails. He gave me access to everything.
Yeah.
And every time he did that, it was like he put a quarter cup of water or a teaspoon of water in that bathtub. And if he got a phone call, he blocked this person, broke off the relationship. We did that together. That was trust building. If he got a phone call from the area code from where that person lived, he would come to me and he would say, I got a phone call today and it was, they left a voicemail, but I've not listened. So I'm waiting for you and I to listen to that together. And every one of those began the time, the steps of putting water back in that bathtub. And that's why it takes 6 months, 12 months, 18 months for trust to be rebuilt, because mm-hmm. it takes time.
We also, it was really important to me that I led the rebuilding of trust. I didn't want Jill to be standing over me like a drill sergeant and saying, you got to do this, you got to do that.
So you pushed, what we learned is you pushed accountability.
We didn't
even have language for it.
Right.
But instead of me pulling or demanding accountability, he pushed it. And what do we mean by that is, like, he would, well, that phone call thing was
that,
like,
was pushing accountability. So Jill and I grew up in the same area that this other woman lived. And so if I, and our parents were still there. So if I needed to go home to help my mom, I would ask Jill to go with me. But if she couldn't go with me, I took a buddy of mine with me for safety for my family and for myself. I didn't want to run into this person and be alone. And so that wasn't, I wasn't a coward, but in courage and strength, I put guardrails in place that provided safety for Jill, for my kids, and for myself, which I had refused to do before. I thought it was silly, but that totally changed.
Yeah, that was huge. And I didn't have to ask for it. I didn't have to ask him to open up his phone. He did it. And boy, just even the not having to ask for it was also trust building. Mm-hmm.
And not that we're trying to put any kind of concrete time frame on this, because in a little bit, I want to talk about just the ongoing nature of nurturing trust throughout. Mm-hmm. It's not like you reach a point in time and say, okay,
yeah,
trust is perfect now.
Yeah.
But when, and maybe Jill, this is more a question for you to answer. When did you feel the scales really tip to where there was a greater, your first reaction was trust rather than maybe fear or suspicion? When did you kind of feel the scales tip?
That's a great question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that in that way. I would say probably about, it was somewhere in the between 6 months and a year. Probably closer to the year. And when I was not, my first instinct wasn't fear. My first instinct wasn't my stomach dropping, you know, and just in little things, like maybe he was out running errands and I couldn't get a hold of him. And, mm-hmm. you know, something like that, just as simple as that, would make your stomach go, what's going on? Where is he? What's happening? And so I would say probably it was just under a year of when it was like, no, he's completely trustworthy. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we use language to describe ourselves. We're Mark and Jill 2.0. And so I would even say that to myself. I would say at, you know, a moment like that, nope, he's Mark 2.0, and Mark 2.0 is a different guy than Mark 1.0. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, that was the thinking that was going through my mind, but it was probably almost a year.
And for me too, Jonathan, that I was very committed to not being upset in whatever question Jill asked, and not to be upset if she had asked me that same question 100 times. I was committed to being steady, to being stable. I took a resolve that I had never had, which actually gave my voice strength. And it gave Jill the ability to hear me. And that was quite incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I'm hearing? It's interesting because I love how just when people share their stories, there's a clarity that comes from what happens when the Lord starts to transform mm-hmm. our lives. Because guess what I'm hearing from the two of you? And maybe you've recognized this yourself and you've heard it from any other people that have heard your story. Isn't it interesting how God has transformed both of your core brokenness that was compatible previously in a broken way to heal it to where now there's a compatibility in a healthy way? Because Mark, you're talking about now, guess what? You were pushing accountability. There was a sense in which, man, you're not passive anymore. You're not in the mm-hmm. shadows. Jill, guess what? You're not trying to take control. You're going, man, there's a softness that's starting to happen in my heart.
Yep.
So I think I just wanted to state that out loud because I think people mm-hmm. need to hear that. Because there's parts of us that have been so hurt and wounded and broken in our core that we sometimes wonder, but can God really work in that area? And I love that even talking about rebuilding trust, God was doing a transformative work in those particular areas in your hearts.
Totally. I love that. And I don't know that we've ever really seen it that way, but I love how you just...
Right. That's a great picture.
Yeah. How you captured that. And, you know, another thing that I think kind of goes with that is we often say when couples are rebuilding trust and they are healing from something like mm-hmm. this, our experience is that the healing process is about 70% individual growth and 30% couple growth. And people think that it's like, oh, we've got all these problems as a couple. But if you don't deal with what you bring to the party, mm-hmm. then the couple can't move forward. And so it's a lot more about personal growth and personal responsibility and personal healing. And then that lays the foundation for the healing that you need to do together as a couple, plus the skills you probably need to learn. Like we had to learn new skills of communication and listening and, mm-hmm. You know, not being so quick to respond to each other, being more curious. Those are important, but it was the personal growth that led the way for that.
Mm.
And Jill, can you talk a little bit about, because I know we've got a lot of wives that are listening, that when they hear this idea of, okay, trust is rebuilt when these behaviors are changing and there's an authentic transformation of a good man showing up in this husband that has done the better things. Sometimes they can hear that and they think that they are then compelled to trust. Can you talk about how trust is still a gift?
Yeah.
That it is not something that is like, you need to be forced because if he's doing all the right things, you just need to trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the need for the patience and the grace in the process of giving trust?
Yeah. I would say, you know, there's one of the things we talk about is there's a formula for rebuilding trust, and that is consistent change behavior over time equals trust. So I think what you're talking about there is the over time piece mm-hmm. and the consistent piece. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair to say I did not trust. Mark was doing all the right things for all of those months. But you asked me earlier, at what point did the scale change? And it was probably, you know, somewhere around 9 or 10 months. And so that's when there had been enough time and enough consistency that I began to go, okay, I don't have to operate out of fear here. And so I think that is the piece. It's, you know, it's just if they're just showing up and doing it, but it's for the short term, you don't yet really know if you can trust them. And mm-hmm. so you begin to, you know, sometimes we can also miss out on what is happening because there is so much fear. We worked with a couple, so we do marriage intensives and we call them our marriage 2.0 intensive. And we were working with a couple and I think they were a year and a half out. Mm-hmm. And man, she just couldn't trust. But honestly, as we worked with him for 3 days, and he really had been a man of consistency for a year and a half. And so what we began to dig into was, her own fears and her own, struggles and her own messages, came from her own childhood. You can't trust men. You can't trust men. Can't be trusted. You know, those kind of things. So, but I kind of digress from your question. I think that, the gift begins by the betrayer, and, they are gifting their trustworthiness in accountability. Yeah. And we often say the trust breaker is the trust maker. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing that consistently. And then we have the ability to give the gift of trust back.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to ask Mark. I wanted to ask you specifically about this. I'm glad you mentioned about trustworthiness, because how important was it? And I don't even know if you were doing this consciously, but you obviously did it in your behavior. How important was it for you that your motivation for rebuilding trust was not to get Jill to say she trusts you, but that you become a trustworthy man?
Mm. Oh, totally. In fact, when all of this began, the rebuilding began, I said to Jill, I spent the first 28 years of our marriage trying to please you. I'm not doing that anymore. This is not for you. This is for my God. And I'm gonna do all I can to be, to follow His will, His way, to be obedient to Him. And my trust is that He'll do the work in you and I, which is where I should have been in the beginning. But I was so much a pleaser, filled with anxiety over pleasing, that I wore myself out. And so I never demanded that Jill trust me. I didn't demand that she pick up the pace. I trusted God to help clean the mess, to help mend the heart, and to show me how to love Jill like He loved us. Because in the past, my love was very selfish. I was demanding. It was transactional. I'll do whatever you want, but I want this in return. And that was selfish.
Yeah. And I think that's very important for the men out there, the guys that have done the betraying, to hear, because they need to understand that the actual best possibility for the restoration of the relationship is to go on that personal journey of saying, God, I want to bear your image the way that you've designed me to bear your image.
Right.
And not do this for some other kind of temporal outcome or some kind of relational connection. As we are kind of landing the plane here, I want you both to speak to the couples that are out there, and just what message of hope would you give them if they're feeling like they're either in these early stages, or they're feeling like they're drowning, or they're wondering if there's any hope for their relationship?
Well, I was a man without hope. And in hopelessness, I took my family to hell and back. And on the other side, I found that I hindered the hope that God was giving me because of my own messages and my own thinking. And Jill and I, we've kind of joked that we're dealers in hope. So what we say is, let us offer our hope to you. And I can confirm that hope is really a present gift from our Lord. And Jill and I have worked with hundreds of couples. And I tell you, we're 90%+ seeing people restore out of all kinds of crazy broken stories. But the Lord is in the restoring business, and He gives us hope.
Yeah. And I would say to the one that has been betrayed, our God was betrayed, and He understands that pain. And the most important thing is to go to Him, that He is the friend who understands. and to recognize that it's amazing what he can do, and how he can rebuild when he has all the pieces. So give him all your pieces. Mm-hmm. And if your spouse isn't interested in rebuilding, he can still rebuild your life. But if your spouse is willing and you're both willing to do the hard work of growth and healing, he can also rebuild your marriage. You can have a 2.0 marriage and it can be better than ever before.
Yes.
That's awesome. So as we wrap up here, where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about the resources that you have for them as couples?
Yeah. Well, the best place is our website, which is markandjill.org. So at markandjill.org, they'll find, we have a rebuilding trust course. Excuse me. We have a rebuilding trust course. We have free rebuilding trust guide. You can find that at rebuildingtrust.us. So rebuildingtrust.us. And our coaching, our intensives, all of our resources are there. And we have podcasts, blog posts that are designed to help couples specifically rebuilding trust from infidelity.
That's great. Well, it's been so great to have you guys on the program today. Thank you for being here and sharing your story.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to post a lot of great resources in our show notes today to get you connected with Mark and Jill and the stuff that they've got to help you take those key next steps in your relationship and rebuild. That's our job, is to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.